On the Record on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC. Great minds think unalike. Different skill sets, diverse opinions, it all adds up. The new equation.
First of all, to give you an overview of what is going on in Glasgow, of course, COP26, also making the front pages of some of the British newspapers. We're told in The Observer that France and UK have been told to end their dispute over Brexit and fisheries, or they might wreck the COP26 summit. But a slightly more optimistic take on the front page of the Sunday Times in Britain. They're reporting that world leaders are close to agreeing a deal to halt global deforestation by 2030. The British government, it says, has secured the commitment of dozens of key countries to reverse the rate of deforestation. An announcement by Boris Johnson is expected on Tuesday at the COP26 climate summit in Glasgow. One man who's already in Glasgow to cover events as they get underway is Channel 4's Alex Thompson. Alex, good morning to you. First of all, you might give us an overview of how likely it is you think that there'll be anything meaningful achieved in the next couple of weeks.
We already have. For the doubters and the naysayers and the doom mongers, the world is undeniably in a way better place now than it was even a month ago. And that is because COP is happening. Just two examples. One, the money, much of the 100 billion, yes, there are caveats and strings, but an awful lot of money has been put up to decarbonize and help decarbonize the nations who need that help most, the poorest countries. There's enormous strides, at least 36 countries signed up to a radical and policeable and examinable reduction in methane. Remember, that's far more damaging than as a greenhouse gas than carbon. That's already been achieved. Those two things would not have happened were COP not happening. So, you know, let's get some perspective on this and let's be not optimistic, but let's be realistic. Those things have happened already. Yes, you mentioned the rainforest, the Sunday Times piece this morning. We're expecting something really significant on that on Tuesday. So there's these three things straight off, which wouldn't have happened if this wasn't happening.
So that's, I suppose, the glass half full outlook on things. Bring us back, though, a little bit to the G20 summit, which is still taking place in Rome today. Italy, of course, officially speaking, a co-host of this COP summit. Do we take it from that sign about deforestation and the likes that maybe there still might be the bones of an agreement to be struck there? Because as it stands, of course, right now, we don't know of any real agreement between those most industrial nations about committing to lower reductions.
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, to try and give you kind of a broader example, a sense of what COP is about. COP is about an MOT test on the vehicle, which is, you know, the Paris Agreement 5 or 6 years ago now, with a postponement because of COP. So 6 years ago, the amazing breakthrough agreement, almost 200 countries, getting them to agree on anything is amazing. But to agree on what they did was a historic thing. Now, what happens now is X years on is making it work. So it's not about setting the targets 1.5 degrees by 2050, all that sort of stuff. It's not about that. It's about how we make this work, how we police it, how we measure our emissions, all this stuff, how we actually make this stuff happen. And that's what you're going to see on Tuesday, I think, with the Rainforest Initiative. It's not just what they say, but it's how they make it happen, how they get through to the brains of people like Jair Bolsonaro, for example, in Brazil, who frankly has been hell-bent on destroying the Amazon thus far, how they actually make this thing work day by day, week by week, and police it and deliver it. That's what this COP is all about. You know, we've done the difficult bit, in a way, by agreeing it back in Paris. Now it's making it work.
Just talk to us a little bit, Alex, because I know this is something that you've been reporting on for Channel 4 News about some of the question marks over the summit's sponsors, a lot of which are themselves fossil fuel or extraction or mining companies, and the degree to which the fact that they're involved might undermine some of the goodwill that's there or some of the bona fides about getting something done.
Yes, this is a bit like people who moan and whinge about, oh, all the people coming in by plane, look at the carbon footprint of this stuff. It completely misses the point. Yes, you can point the finger at a number of key sponsors. NatWest have put billions into oil and gas and still do put some money in. National Grid, one of the other key sponsors, they have fought against a number of climate change legal initiatives in the United States. They're big on gas. But here's the thing. Yeah, this is not to say that there are conflicts of interest with the sponsors, so much as to say this is how entwined and deeply, deeply embedded our entire world is with fossil fuels, and thus how enormously hard it's going to be to get out. But what you have to say and recognize about the key sponsors is that they are doing more than most. So it's just to say how deeply embedded we are with carbon. That's the problem. And that's what the issue over the sponsors really highlights. These companies have millions and millions invested. I mean, Glasgow City Council and its pension fund has millions invested in oil and gas, as most city pension funds do. And the point is, you can vote to get out of that, as Glasgow have, but the people who run the pension funds are financially obliged to maximise those investments. So it's not that easy. It doesn't happen overnight. But the point is, it is beginning to happen. We are beginning to talk about these things, and action and movement is beginning to happen. As ever, it's about the pace of that. Is it fast enough? Is it radical enough?
Well, just very briefly, Alex, before I let you go on the pace of that, we know that obviously the G20 leaders are still in Rome right now, but not all of them are actually expected to make their way to Glasgow. Xi Jinping not going to attend, some question marks about Vladimir Putin or some other leaders of big countries as well. Does that perhaps suggest that some of the most pollutant countries might be slightly less committed to putting something big on the table this week?
Look, it's not great that Xi Jinping is not there. It's less of a thing because they're less big on the pollution scale that Putin isn't there. But again, look what happened at the UN conference recently in New York. Xi Jinping didn't go, but he did send a top-level delegation, and they did make some real commitments. Remember the Chinese committing to stopping all future financing of coal abroad. Nothing yet domestically, but we're watching and expecting something on that. The fact that Xi Jinping is not there, yes, it's not great. It's not a great look. But the absolute top level Chinese delegation is coming. As we saw in New York, that does not stop China delivering something and coming to the party.
Alex Thompson from Channel 4 News, thanks for giving us that broad overview of what we can expect in Glasgow in the next couple of days. I have to say, I don't know for certain whether there's any exposure to fossil fuels in maybe in Dublin City Council's pension scheme. Kieran Cuff might know. Kieran Cuff, the Green MEP for Dublin, once upon a time a member of Dublin City Council. Kieran, now that I think about it out loud, I suspect that the Irish government or local government pension schemes are all administered by central government, and that means that the more recent bills about divestment from fossil fuels means that at least City Council pensions aren't tied up in fossil fuel extraction.
That would be my understanding, Gavin, and I think pensions are paid from incoming revenue rather than from a pension fund. I may be wrong on that, but I don't think Dublin City Council has investments in oil and gas, as far as I know.
We'll maybe go and try and check that out and firm it up one way or another over the course of the programme. Good morning to you anyway, Kieran. Do you share the fairly upbeat assessment that you just heard from Alex Thompson about there being something meaningful done in the next couple of days?
I think there will. Look, I'm always torn between whether saying COPs are a success or a failure. And the truth is they're somewhere in between. The problem is science is telling us we need dramatic cuts in greenhouse gas emissions now, and politicians are reluctant to move with the urgency that is required. Yes, I agree with Alex. We need to make cuts fast. They need to be fair. And they need to be achievable, because in the past, and I remember going to COP in Copenhagen and in Poznan, great promises made, but the finance, particularly to developing countries, didn't materialise at the rate that was expected. Here in Glasgow, I think it's a little bit different. Look, I've been in environmental politics for 40 years, and about every 10 years we see a wave of green enthusiasm. But I think this time, there's a much closer link between the scientific evidence and the policymakers, the politicians. I think we will see progress at this COP in Glasgow. I think we'll see progress on both the detail of the agreements that we're making, but I also think it has an important role to play in bringing the people with us. And I think this week, as we look at the sectoral targets in Ireland, it's a good time to talk about what can be achieved in agriculture, in construction, in energy, and in transportation.
You mentioned some of the financing concerns there, Kieran. I suppose that's just as important, that not only do countries commit to whatever measures they need to cut their emissions, but that there's also the financing to help the world get up to speed and to embrace new, cleaner technologies. How likely is that to be achieved when, of course, this is ultimately a UN summit among governments and there isn't any sort of formal representation for the finance sector there?
I think we will see movement. I think the European Union is saying very clearly that we do need to make progress. And I think what we bring to the table as a group of 27 member states is a commitment to over halving our emissions over the next 10 years. That's significant, and I think we can bring other countries with us on this.
So you think that the countries being able to talk in a vacuum without the financing sector actually being present is still grounds for there to be some movement?
I think it is. And I mean, there is a day devoted to finance. We do have the former chair of the Bank of England speaking. I think finance is on the table. And from the kind of discussions I've had over the last 2 years with financial institutions, the European Central Bank, the European Investment Bank, the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, they want to move. What they want is the legislative certainty to move towards green finance. And I think the European Union has been good on this. And I think an event like COP26 will help bring the rest of the world with us on this journey. And even the discussions we've seen with Joe Biden's administration in the US over an enormous financial package, so much is focused on the finance to move towards low-carbon technologies. And there is a mood of optimism about that.
On the broader front, you say that, you know, every 10 years there might be a sort of a wave of interest, but maybe the science is closer to it now. You heard me ask Alex how much of a danger it is that some of the world's more enthusiastic emitters aren't going to be present. Xi Jinping isn't going to be there. Jair Bolsonaro of Brazil isn't going to be there, nor is his deputy. People could read a lot of pessimism into the fact that if they're not attending in person, maybe their governments are not all that committed to presenting an agenda for reasonable change.
I think in the case of China, I wouldn't be so pessimistic. China is backing two horses. They are massively investing in both green technologies and in older technologies such as coal. But the beauty of China is it's centrally controlled and it can move policies if it so wishes. They have a five-year plan and the next five-year plan can move in a green or a brown direction. And I think China will be watching the way the rest of the world goes. And if they get a signal from the COP that we want more ambition, I think they will follow.
But then don't you need other governments to be there for Kieran, that if you don't have the likes of Vladimir Putin there, if you don't have India making any meaningful contributions, if you don't have Brazil stepping up to the plate, then it creates the culture where other countries feel like that they can drop their commitments. And then it's very difficult to convince citizens to go out of their way to face more expense and do the right thing if they don't think that major governments are on the ball as well.
Well, I think particularly because countries like Ireland, so much of our carbon footprint is actually generated in countries like China, where the manufacturing is done for products that end up in Ireland. So I think there's a moral imperative to lead by example in Ireland and in Europe. And I think if we do show what's possible, and particularly if we show the technologies and the finance that can bring us to a low carbon future, then I think China will follow. It's more challenging with countries like Brazil and elsewhere in the developing world or the majority world. And I think we have to get the finance right because we have to reduce our own emissions, but we have to help developing countries onto a clean development path. And to put it bluntly, that requires money. And we have to help finance that clean development path in the majority world. And that, I think, will be challenging over the next few days with the forestry finance and with other initiatives to help really struggling poorer nations onto a clean development path, one that we didn't take over the last 30 or 40 years.
One other question for you, Kieran, before I let you go, about how all of this translates into action back at home. And you might have heard me mention the front page of the Sunday Independent this morning, which says that agriculture emissions may have to come down by as much as 30% over the forthcoming 8 or 9 years or so. But they insist that that can be done without having to lower the number of livestock that farmers are able to keep. A lot of people would think that that's very wishful thinking, that if you're going to try and reduce maybe the country's most emissive sector by 30%, that the only way you can do it is by telling some farmers that they can't carry as many cattle.
I think there's a lot of good research being done on feeds, on breeds, on supplements, on ways that we can move our livestock, both beef and dairy, onto lower methane emissions. And I think that's crucial. And meanwhile, at European level, we have the cap. The cap has not changed significantly. So the money is there to provide the supports. And we provide, you know, a third of the European Union budget goes on agricultural supports. That will be there. But look, it won't be easy in the agricultural sector in Ireland. I think that we will need a lot of assistance from Chagask, from the Climate Advisory Council, to help farmers onto a low carbon path. But we've seen the impact, not just the climate impact. We've seen the problem with pollution of our rivers and streams. We've seen the problems of over intensification and what that can produce. So we do need to take action.
Ciarán Cough, Green Party MEP for Dublin, thank you very much for joining us.
On the Record on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC. Great minds think unalike. Different skill sets, diverse opinions, it all adds up to the new equation.